Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, a show where we cover the news, the gaming news from the past couple of weeks. We talk about PC, we talk about consoles, we talk about industry trends, we talk about big news, and we do all of that and have fun at the same time. How amazing. My name is Patrick Beja, and in order to provide the fun, I need to have a co-host, because I, by myself, as exemplified by this last I'm not a lot of fun. But my co-host for the day is Nicole Spag is joining us. Is it the first time you're on Pixels?
It is the first time I'm on Pixels.
How is that possible?
I don't know, but I'm really happy about it. And honestly, it's way too early to have to be fun. And I didn't have coffee either, so I don't know how the show's going to go.
Well, it's late for me. So. Actually, you know what? I know why you haven't been on the show. You went and had kids.
Oh, like, yeah. That's, had the babies.
Yeah, that's the reason. but now your kids are all grown up. They go to school. Your husband takes care of them.
They're all grown up.
Well, you know, when they go to school, you don't need to worry about them anymore. That's the way I understand it.
True. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's less. You get a little bit more time.
Okay. Mine started daycare a few weeks ago, and our life has been transformed. We're much happier people now. Not that I don't. Listen, kid. If you're listening to this, like, super when you're older, that's not what I meant. We have nothing but love,
but
we work from home, and it's hard to. I'm not going to be able to get out.
You're
of
not.
This one,
you
am
just,
I?
You don't. You just. You always just. I love my child. I wish I could spend every minute with them, and then you go play video games.
That we'll see how that turns out. But we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. Of course, Nicole Spag, for those who don't know, we've been podcasting together for a long time. We did a bunch of shows together, including the movie Licious, where Terpster was also on the show.
I miss that show.
It was so fun. What's happening there?
Sorry, I got a phone call on it. Apparently,
Is it your husband saying, Nicole, I can't handle these monsters.
Just drop them off.
we used to do a lot of shows all the time together, and now we don't so much because we're grown ups all of a sudden, and we have stuff to do. But now you have a little bit more time, so I hope you're going to be on the show every once in a while.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Let's see how this goes first. Maybe you're going to be like,
let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
But we are going to be talking about a bunch of stuff. News-wise, there's news that Sony is not going to be at E3. We're going to be discussing that. Rumors that Microsoft is working on a physical media-less version of the Xbox. That might release in 2019, somewhere around the spring. And then a bunch of games we've been playing. Well, a couple of games we've been playing, maybe. And a bunch of other news. So let's get started with what I guess is the biggest news of the last couple of weeks. The fact that Sony is not going to be at E3 after having canceled their PlayStation Experience event, which they usually hold in December. I say usually it's happened like 3 or 4 times. And the rationale behind the canceling of the PlayStation experience was, well, we don't have a lot to show, so we don't want everyone to be disappointed. Right. I guess they didn't word it like that exactly. But we don't want people to be disappointed, so we're just not going to do the show. And I suspect that them not being at E3 is kind of the same thought process. They're not going to do a press conference, and they're not going to be at the show floor. So, like, literally not at E3 at all. I'm guessing they're working on the PlayStation 5, and they're not ready to announce anything, so they won't only be able to show the last games they have for this generation, which are, you know, Last of Us 2, Ghost of Tsushima, and probably the Death Stranding. There you go. And we've seen those like 15 times already. So,
So first time in 24 years of E3's 24-year history, they will not be attending.
And I think that's...
But I can respect it, though. If you don't have anything to show, rather keep them wanting versus being disappointed.
I think that completely makes sense. But a lot of people went to the conclusion that this essentially affects E3 and the industry as a whole. And for a lot of people, essentially, the world is burning now. Everything's falling apart because, you know, E3 has been a staple of the gaming industry for a long time. And EA has already decided they weren't going to be at E3. And they have their side thing. It's unclear as of yet whether or not Sony is going to have their side thing this year. It seems unlikely. If they did, they would probably go to E3. But it might be that they don't come back, you know? And that, you know, poses the question of the relevance of E3 and big trade shows for this industry. Because in tech, big trade shows have sort of lessened in importance as big manufacturers have created their own events. And Sony, just like Nintendo, could very well own their messaging and pull out of E3 entirely. So
I could see that.
Yeah.
Well, like Apple does. Apple has a big...
And event. Samsung and, you know, well, maybe those two. But Sony is one of the big dogs, so they could completely own their own news cycle. I would be sad if E3 ended up not being this giant... geek fest, nerd fest, where everyone is, you know, super excited at the same time about the same things and watches the all of the press conferences and makes fun of everything that's happening. You know, it's as we were fond of saying, it's kind of our Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, but doesn't it seem like though the market is saturated with all these conventions though? I mean
E3 is the biggest
fan conventions. I understand that, but you can only get so big. You can't get, I mean, they've seemed like they've been growing. Maybe it's a time, because my real work is we run a woodworking website, and we go to the woodworking conventions, and there's two really big ones, and they actually alternate. So one year the conference is in Atlanta, the other year it's in Vegas. And they can only, they're big industry events, but they can only get so big. And there was, for a while, they seemed like they were just growing. And then, you know, the companies backed off, and then they grow up again, and then they back off, and they grow up. It's a cycle, I think. I think it's a natural.
I think there's some of that. And certainly we have, you know, I guess the other big one is PAX that you think about. And then there's Gamescom in the middle of summer. And you have, in PAX, there are like, what, four PAXes now? And then you have Paris Games Week, which has been growing in the past couple of years in the fall. But I think this is different. If they don't go to E3, it would be to do their own thing like so many others still do. And I understand that this is a possibility. I think there's also a possibility that they're just not going this year, but next year when they want to announce, you know, the PlayStation 5, and they want to reach the consumer media, not just the hardcore gamer media. I think E3 is still the best way of doing this. Although they could just, you know, rent a theater and invite everyone, including, you know, whatever New York Times and ABC and people would report on that as well, for especially
and Sony is a, I mean, are Sony as a company, they do a lot. They do movies, they do video games. Do you ever see them having like a big Sony that they talk about all of their properties, or do they kind of keep those siloed?
No, it's very siloed, but the gaming division is also the biggest one by far of all of the other ones. So I don't know.
It does seem like, though, entertainment is crossing, the line is being blurred a lot with properties, with gaming and movies and TV.
Yeah, but so when you,
it is very, it's interesting.
If you cross them too much, you risk very big backlash, like we've seen with, you know, when Microsoft announced the Xbox One, that they tried to do that. And they tried to speak to gamers like as if they had them in their pocket and they were trying to reach others. So I don't think anyone's going to be making that mistake again.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, leads us to the opportunities for Microsoft this year, because they have, like, Nintendo does a Direct, which they always do. And the others aren't as big. So Microsoft has the whole stage now. And they could, I don't know what they could do to essentially bring people back in droves. They could announce their next console. I don't think it's going to happen. But if they did and say, you know, it's going to be available early in 2019, you know, in 2020. I don't think they would announce it if it was released at the end of the year, 2020. But if it's available early 2020, I don't think it's going to be available in 2019. It would be a bit early, especially if, as we have rumors, they're still releasing Xbox hardware, Xbox One hardware in 2019.
Or, you know, I didn't even buy an Xbox One.
I had one, but it's been in the cupboard for a while.
And that's what happened with my 360. I played it every once in a while, but I was like, yeah, I'm gonna skip the Xbox One this time and focus on the PlayStation.
Yeah, I think it's...
It had more titles that I wanted to play on
exactly. The PlayStation. Well, I think, you know, as we've often said, the Xbox One is great if you want to play the few exclusives that are on Xbox One. Otherwise, you're better off having a console that has more exclusives. And that's what they've understood. As we said last episode, they've been buying studios like left and right, and they're going to have a lot of exclusives for the next generation, which... Well, let's talk about this then. The diskless Xbox One, which is rumored for 2019, would cost less than the current Xbox One S, which is $300, but, you know, you can usually get cheaper. It would be, it seems they're targeting a price of around $200, which would be great. Of course, it wouldn't be appropriate for everyone because some people don't have enough internet speed to use a diskless device.
What's the size? Yeah, what's the size that they're given? Is it like a terabyte or anything?
Oh, I'm guessing it would be a terabyte,
It better be big.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. I mean, I could see 500 megs, but it would need a terabyte,
megs?
I think. Oh, not megs, gigs, sorry.
Gigs. I'm like, where are we in 1999?
But yeah, I mean that could work for some people. We were talking before the show, and you were telling
me. I download all my games anymore. I actually get annoyed when I have to get up and change out a disc.
So. Me too. I think it comes with parenthood, maybe.
Maybe. You're like, I can't
get up from my couch. What is this, like 1973? What are you talking about?
But like with the Fallout 76, I just queued it up to download and it was done, and then I watched the little countdown go, okay, you can play now. I'm like, oh, I don't have to do anything. I just hit start.
That's what I do. That, like, the annoying things, it's now ironically more expensive to buy the game digitally than it is to buy the physical copy, which is moronic because we have more restrictions with the digital version. And the other thing is, you'd usually have to wait. Well, you have to wait until release day, when sometimes the physical copy you can get in some stores before. So,
right.
But still, I also buy all the things physically. I mean, digitally. So I could completely see that device being appealing to some people. And so this is where it gets interesting, I think. If it sort of has the tech included that could transform the device into an Xbox Scarlett, you know, with the streaming technology, or just, you know, the downloading the games, if it,
like,
could
a whole
transform
media center, right?
Well, I mean, the you've heard about this, the Scarlett service that they're rumored to be preparing for the next generation, right?
I probably, but I don't remember.
You have kids.
I have a terrible memory now that I've had kids.
So the rumor is, for those who don't remember, is that it would be a dual system where you can either purchase the game like physically or digitally and install it, mm-hmm. or you could stream the games in that, you know, fashion, super fashionable way that, you know, and the consoles could do both. So
like
you would
the
have
online.
Exactly, of old. Okay. And the PlayStation Now, and And supposedly they would have tech that would make latency a lot more bearable than it is now with the current services. And everyone's doing this. You know, there's a Google service, there's a bunch of different, and even Microsoft has announced the xCloud for that version of the Xbox One service. So everyone's going to it, and the next generation could very well be that. And if you buy that device and it's compatible with it, with the next version, with the streaming, not obviously with the purchasing of the games because the tech wouldn't be capable of rendering those games because it would still be Xbox One tech. But if you could use it for the streaming version, it could be interesting. So, I don't know. The supreme irony in all of this, we touched on DRM. Is the fact that Microsoft, with the Xbox One, with their failed announcements, was trying to tell us these digital rights should be yours, and they did a terrible job at it. But and I've talked about it many, many times throughout the years. But they were trying to tell us you should be able to sell the games that you've purchased digitally. You should be able to lend them. You should be able to share them to all of this, and because of gamer outrage, which I understand it was very badly presented. It was a terrible presentation, tanked the generation for them. But now we're in a future where it's impossible to do all of this. Yeah. And anyway.
Because that's honestly the only reason I buy physical is if I know it's a game. So like I picked up Far Cry 5 because I wanted to play it that night and I didn't want to wait for the download. So I ran to Best Buy, got it, and I ended up letting Brian Ibbett borrow it from me. So I was like, oh, that was nice. And play Far Cry 5.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we can't do that with, anyway, that's a completely different story.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason to buy discs nowadays. But that is going away, it seems, in the future.
It does seem like it.
I would hope that Microsoft would have the courage to do that again. Kind of like to bring this back as an option for people. Oh, and by the way, they have apparently, again, this is rumors, but for people who would like to buy this version of the Xbox One without digital media available, that it wouldn't have a drive, essentially, a disk drive, you could get your physical disk to a partner store and get it exchanged for a code that would give you the game, the digital version of that game, for your console. So you could still somehow get, I think it's a nice transition thing. But
and also, does it have a like a USB port? You could always have like an external drive, maybe.
Well, I guess it would be possible, I suppose.
How laptops worked. Oh my God, you got rid of the disk drive. What am I going to do? Oh, I really didn't use it anyways. It's okay.
Exactly. No, but you're right. Maybe that would be possible. I mean, they are essentially PCs, but all of those consoles. So, I mean, the Xbox and the PlayStation. So, would be interesting. All right. So that is the rumor. So it could be a nice way of targeting different markets. Microsoft.
I still won't buy it.
Well, I don't know. I might. If it has, I don't know.
You won't. It's all
right. Well, I mean, I have an Xbox One in my cupboard. The issue is it's the original one, which is gigantic and has this power supply unit, which takes basically as much space as my TV.
Is it like the 360's powers? I mean, it was like a brick.
I think it's a bit bigger. It's at least as big. But you know, the new one, the Xbox One and the One X, are tiny. Like it's wonderful engineering on the Microsoft team's part, and this one would probably be a little bit smaller, I'm guessing. I don't know. The thing is, I might be interested in the Game Pass, for you know. A while for some of the games they have. The other issue is there are so many games that I don't have time for. Like there are already a ton of games. Well, some games I would like to play on the Xbox, but I just don't have time. There are too many other games. I don't know. Anyway, that discless Xbox One might be coming. But let's talk about the many games that are coming and that are available now. Bunch of releases since we last did an episode. Tetris Effect, Hitman 2, Battlefield 5, Fallout 76, Pokemon Let's Go. Pokemon Let's Go, super popular, of course. I'm not a Pokemon person, so I didn't get into it. I played Tetris Effect. I was surprised I wasn't big into it. I love Mizuguchi. Well, actually, that's not true. I loved Lumines, and I love Tetris, but I didn't. Maybe I should try it a bit more. Maybe I should try it in VR. Hitman 2.
I have VR. I just haven't really played it because Skyrim looked horrible on it. I'm like, I'm not playing this game. It looks terrible. I am looking forward to the Borderlands release. I will play it on.
Yeah, the you're a big Borderlands fan. That's coming at the end of December, right?
Maybe.
So actually, hey, talking about VR, I should try Tetris Effect, but it's a bit expensive for what it is. But I should try it in VR because I think this game is very well suited to that kind of experience of enveloping experience. So I really should try it. And I finally plugged back in my PSVR. The problem is it doesn't have HDR pass-through, so I can't play my games in HDR on my brand new TV, which is super nice and has HDR, so I unplugged it. Now I plugged it back in to give Astrobot Rescue Mission a try, and it is really fun. I just played the demo. It's like half an hour worth of game time, but it's surprisingly, everyone's been saying it's a really good game. It's a really good game, or at least it feels like it. Like it's so charming and cleverly designed, and by all accounts, it gets better with additional levels. I think I'm gonna buy it. It's a very well designed version of an old school platformer, imagined in VR, and it's very appropriate. It's very clever the way it uses the mechanics and. It's very surprising. I really enjoyed it, and I might buy it. There's, you know, Beat Saber, which I might buy as well. Everyone's been raving about. And Tetris Effect, which could be interesting in VR. PSVR is really in a good place, I think, right now. So with the bundles coming for $200, it happened at Black Friday. I'm sure there will be more for the holidays. It might be a nice way to try VR. And Astrobot looks fine. It's not, you know, going to blow your mind visually, but it didn't, you know, bother me visually either. So PSVR is in a pretty good place right now. And I wouldn't recommend it to someone who's not curious about VR. I wouldn't say, you know, go get it now. It's awesome. But if you're curious, it's starting to be at $200. I think it's a pretty good purchase.
It's honestly a novelty. I don't even know like how well the Borderlands game is gonna turn.
Yeah, I don't have high wires. Hopes.
I agree. Wires it is a novelty. You, and you know it is.
But I think you know. I think it's possible to recommend nowadays. To get that experience and to see where it might be going in the future. Whereas, you know, a year ago, I wouldn't have said so. You know, I would have said, maybe.
Because if we don't buy this tech now, it will never get better.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Sony did a PSVR 2 for the next generation, just because they want to be, you know, with a better version of the hardware and everything. It's already the most comfortable, the best compromise. Anyway, we'll see. But Astrobot, surprising. I'm going to look into it a little bit further. But the ones we wanted to talk about are the ones that were just released. Hitman 2 seems great. It's just more Hitman 1, and Hitman 1 is...
Is it weird that I thought Hitman 2 was already released?
A re-release of Hitman 1?
No, that it's already been out for a while. Like I'm like, oh...
Because people talk about it so much, I think.
Maybe.
But the thing is, the first one is so cheap that it's probably a good idea to get the first one unless you're really into it already.
Gotcha. Same way with Battlefield. Like, there's been so many different Battlefields. I'm like, which I can't keep up.
Wait, so are you saying this? And now we're going to be talking about Fallout 76? Yep. And like, oh, but that's different.
This is the game that I care about, right?
Right, right, exactly. That's the difference. So let's get to that. Fallout 76, I think one of the most, the least
First
well
off, have
received...
you played it?
No, I haven't. But
you haven't played it.
Let me set the stage. Everyone hates it, I think.
Except you.
No, that's not exactly true. The feedback I've been getting from Fallout 76 is it is completely broken. It's
not
super
completely broken.
Flawed. That's the feedback I've been getting. You can tell us the opposite now.
So let me just finish
setting the stage, as I said. People think it's broken. It is unacceptable that Bethesda put out a game that badly conceived. And yet, at the same time, everyone who's been talking about it and, you know, talking about it seriously has been saying, and yet, I played it like 20, 30 hours and I want to play it more. So it's a very, I don't know, dysfunctional relationship people have to this game. I think everyone thinks it's bad, but it's also
good. Everyone doesn't. Yeah.
Except for you. You love it because you love everything Fallout.
No, I don't love... Well, yeah, I do.
but tell us, so I think I would love to know exactly what it is, first of all.
Because I feel like people are going... They think they're going to have Fallout 5 in this game, and they're not. Mm. And then you have other people going, oh, it's just a money grab. I have yet, other than paying for the game, I have yet to do any of the microtransactions. You earn these coins as you're progressing through the story. The main thing when you go in, because this is a leveling. I'm level 19, I think. So it's totally different, but yet totally the same with the other Fallout games. There are little nuances. So it's
it's a multiplayer game. It's not a single player experience.
Right. But I'm doing it single player. Mm. I'm not grouping with anyone. I'm a loner. In fact, I even have a perk card for, I get bonus for just going out on my own.
But so what do you do? Like, is there an actual story to follow? Are there quests? Are there characters? I've heard there's no NPCs.
There are NPCs. They're just dead.
Okay.
And so let me just set the stage here. Okay. I have it on PS4. I played like the minute it unlocked. I logged in. I was very nervous. I didn't really know what I was getting into. I knew there was PvP, but I didn't really know when that was going to happen. So I basically just followed the quest. And the quest is the Overseer has left the vault before you did, and you need to go find the Overseer's clues as she's kind of surveying the land to find what's been going on.
So for people who don't
everything
know,
the
game is set like it's the first Fallout, of course, post nuclear series. The world has exploded with nuclear bombs, and usually you get out at different times after the apocalypse and explore the world that is a post apocalyptic world. This one, you're the first vault that opens, and you're supposed to be the people who repopulate the earth and prepare the earth for the other vaults that are going to open later. So it's relatively recently after the nuclear apocalypse, and so everything is destroyed and broken, and it uses the Fallout 4 engine mostly, and it's heavily multiplayer, or at least that's how it's being sold.
It is. Yeah. So as you log in, you go into a world, and they have a lot of different worlds. So the nice thing is that you can, like, if somebody's griefing you, like once you get past level 5, you can go into PvP, but if you do not engage, you take a lot less damage if somebody's trying to kill you, which is nice. So you can even log out and log back in, and you'll go to a totally different server. So there's ways around, because I know some people were like, oh, somebody's griefing. Well, you can do stuff about that. The only annoying thing is right now, I guess the audio's on if you have a mic. And so I was in this one zone, and I just hear this guy breathing and like coughing and coughing and breathing. I'm like, dude, just turn off your mic. What is the
deal? It's like proximity.
Yeah, it's a proximity. So we were in the same zone together, killing a new type of ghoul called the Scorched, okay. Who actually shoot at you, which I was like, whoa, wait, I'm not used to that kind of ghoul. And like I said, the story, all the NPCs are dead, but you get the story and you get the quest through the audio files, those holotapes. And so you're collecting these holotapes and you're kind of piecing together. For me, I like it and I don't like it because I always have hope that I'm going to find, because like I have one mission where I have to go find somebody. I'm like, maybe they'll be alive, but I know they're not going to be alive. So you feel completely alone in this world because it's just, you know, there are other people like you out there, but as far as the people that survived, you're kind of piecing together stories. And I love games like that, where I kind of unwrap the story through different means, whether it's computer terminals, hacking the terminals, gathering, very BioShock, right?
But so you don't feel you're like playing it. Like the solo half of a game that isn't a solo game. You don't feel you're getting a lesser experience than, because it feels like, well, you're playing it like a Fallout 3 or 4 or New Vegas or whatever.
I kind of am because I don't like people.
Okay, but isn't the game less than those?
So why did they give me a loner perk? Because they know people are going to play this game on their own.
Right. No, but I'm not asking if you're, you know, if it's impossible. I'm asking if the game is less good than those other 100% solo player dedicated games, because this one has a, even though you're not using it, it has an emphasis on multiplayer like you're not using half the game. Are you feeling like you're playing half a game?
No, I don't.
Okay.
They also have these things called events. Think Rift. Remember how Rift would have those big group events?
Right. Or for people who didn't go sleep in 1999, Destiny, I guess, has public events as well.
Yeah, Destiny. Okay, whatever. I'm thinking MMOs, okay? But I remember when Rift did that and we were like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And they have these like events throughout the whole world. And you can group together. You don't have to actually physically group in the game. You just
show up and you work together.
Do you partake in those? I do. Yeah, because those are fun. And I really, you know, like there's one where you have to protect the food. There's like a food factory where you're repairing it and you got to protect it from, because it's loud, so all the ghouls come. So there was like me and two other guys just trying to protect the facility as the time ran down. And then once you do that, you get a ton of loot. One of the cool things
Destiny.
Is
this is exactly
I play Destiny. I know exactly what Destiny is.
So is it comparable? Like this kind of alone doing your thing, but sometimes you hang out with other people and then you part ways and you're like, yeah, bye.
Yeah. Yeah, see. And there's even like little emotes where you can wave to them.
Right.
So there's all kinds of emotes that you can do. Some of the cool things I love, like they've expanded on the music. So one of the elements that I absolutely love in Fallout is the radio station.
Right.
And so they've brought a lot of the old songs from Fallout 4. So like the Butcher one, and there's a few others. And it's nice because I'm like, oh, I like this song and I miss it from Fallout 4. And I really feel like Fallout 4, especially the DLC, prepped me for 76. The DLC had a building and I was building like crazy. I finally got the hang of it and I'm building and building. Well, this is the same thing. So you have a camp that you can lay down and then build up your house, and you can put all your stuff in there, and you have what is called a stash. And in that stash, it's safe. So as long as you put it in your stash, nobody can get to the stash. If you get killed in the world, you lose, I think, your junk, and it all drops into a tiny little baggie, and you can go back and get it if you can get back to where you died.
Can other people take it from you?
I I don't know that. Okay. If they can find it, it's like impossible to find. I mean, it's a
I'm
brown
sure there's
paper.
PvP you can get something from.
Yeah. It's also my junk. So it's like, whatever, I can find more junk. In fact, I have so much junk now that I my stash is full. Like, you can only have 400 items, which is kind of annoying. I want more. So
yeah, I've heard they're going to patch that.
Oh, good. Thank you. Because I'm trying to manage. I'm doing a lot of managing of weight and item numbers right now.
So,
and it's getting a little annoying.
I guess the fun you're having is just exploring the world and being in a full-out world. I'm not getting the feeling that people who don't have a particular love for Fallout would get anything other than being in that world. Like, they're... I don't know.
Well,
it's
like,
hard to describe.
For instance, I'm on a show called Lazy Elite, and one of my co-hosts, Stephanie, she does not like Fallout 76 at all. Like, she
does. But does she like the other Fallouts?
She did.
Okay.
She liked Fallout 4. She's like, oh, those stupid bloat flies, they kill me. And oh, I got attacked by a bunch of ghouls. I'm like, what are you doing? You're exploring too early. If you get out of that vault and just start exploring, you're gonna die. You gotta follow the quest line. Just follow the quest line and do the training. They actually have in almost every town a little training. So the first town you come up, you go into like this little bar area, and there's like some terminals, and you go up to them and you start reading them, and then you can go through their training to become a rescuer or whatever. I don't know what they were called. But then further down the road, there's another training facility to become a firefighter. So they've set up all these automated training, and once you complete the training, you get all this good loot, and then you get leveled up and all that stuff. And one of the cool things that you can do now is dilute your stim packs and your rat away. So a lot of the things that help you, you can actually break them down and make them last, because things are scarce in this world. Like,
there's a survival aspect.
Oh, yes.
To it, right?
Like, oh, my bobby pins. I used to have hundreds of bobby pins in Fallout 4. I have like 10 and I lose them really quickly, because it's so much harder to pick a lock in this. Everything's just harder. And so you gotta be slow and steady with this game.
Okay.
I'm having a blast with it. And if you wanted to play, I would bring you in and I would help you.
I'm not a fan of Fallout to begin with, so I'm guessing this game isn't for me.
Yeah. If you don't like that world, then it's not that kind of, you wouldn't like
it. I do want to ask about the bugs, though, because everything I could read and see on social media and in other podcasts and on reviews was, this game is riddled with bugs, some of them game breaking. And it seems like you're saying you have never seen a single bug.
No, I didn't say that. Okay. I will say that Bethesda is known for their bugs. In fact, I was playing Fallout 3 and I tried to play the DLC on the PlayStation and I couldn't. It was like game killing. Like, I didn't even play the DLC because it just killed the game.
So are you saying it's not worse than usual, or
it's not worse than usual for me? Okay. but that in mind, a few days ago they had a huge, it was 47 gigs. It was basically replacing the entire game patch. It was huge. And that I think probably fixed a lot of the instabilities. I did have one scenario where I was exploring the headquarters of this company, and I went up and for whatever reason, they have these things called, I told you about the Scorched. Well, eventually the Scorched become radioactive, and they're like radioactive statues, and you can search them. Every time I would search that statue, the game would go, and then it would crash. I was like, "Ooh, that's not good. I will not go there. That I will not need to do."
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of maybe part of the reaction to this. It might be worse than you haven't, you know, than usual, and you haven't encountered those bugs. But I think the reaction as well was people realizing, you know, we've been laughing off the Bethesda releases bugged games issue for years. And now it's kind of, all right, it's not funny anymore. You know, we love you, or we loved you, but now you're kind of pushing it too far. So I think there's an element of that as well.
I don't know. it's nothing that stops me from playing the game. Like if it were to stop me from playing the game or going forward, then yeah, of course I'm going to be upset. But I'm like, okay, so I just don't go to that. Yeah, I don't do that.
I mean, it is. You understand how this is not an acceptable solution to the issue for a game that you've paid full price. And also, sure. I think, I mean, it's not that I don't trust you. It's just that I've heard so many people describing in detail the bugs that they've had that I think you might have been lucky in your not encountering so many bugs. I'm sorry?
When did it happen, number one? Was it before?
It was probably before that huge patch, I'm guessing, yeah.
So,
yeah. All right.
It's a huge world. It's a huge, complicated world because every time you log in, it's going. So, like, I could loot a chest in the same area, then log out and log back in, and I could go into a different server and I could loot it again. So
that's not great.
It's just. Well, why not?
That opens the game to so much, you know, not griefing, but. Yeah. Well, anyway, listen, I'm really happy you're getting what you want out of it. Clearly you're loving it.
There are a lot of hate. It cracks me up how much hate is on a video game.
I think it might be a breaking point as well. And there's the suspicion that this is a quick cash grab, which I get the feeling the team actually wanted to try out what a multiplayer Fallout would look like. And they realized, you know, at the same time, the company realized, well, we don't have a big game this year. Maybe you could release this. It could as easily have been a, you know, smaller $40 game. Which would have made
it is $40, like in your notes, it's $40 right now.
Well, that's a whole other thing. A week after it was released, not even like 5 days. It was on sale on PSN for Black Friday, and I'm guessing on the other platforms as well, for $40, which, like, I understand games, you know, are on sale like a month after or 2 months after they've released, but 5 days, that, I mean, if you bought it for full price 5 days before, it's not fun to see it on sale.
I wanted to play it the day it released. I was even interested in the beta. You had to pre-order it for the beta, so a lot of people wanted it for the beta.
Okay,
so.
But come on, Nicole. I mean, you understand how that is, you know, that sale 5 days afterwards is, you know, leaves a bad taste in your mouth, right?
The problem is when it released around the holidays. So you're just going to have sales around
still.
I get it.
Okay,
I get it,
but all right.
I paid what I paid. There's no sense crying over...
paid money. I get that you're having fun and you like the game and you're fine with that, but I also understand that some people who, you know, have bought it like 3 days before, they're like, oh, it was released 2 days ago. Wait, what?
Yeah.
$40? I paid 60 or 70 2 days earlier.
That's how sales work.
Yeah, but it is different when the game was released 5 days earlier. Come on, you don't tell me you don't see that.
I see that it released on November 14th. The following week was Thanksgiving and Black Friday.
Fine. Okay. Well,
I guess I know shopping. I know what I understand how these. I mean, does Bethesda have say over the sales as well?
Of course.
Sometimes when you. No, do they?
Well, I mean, maybe it was ZeniMax, but.
Because a lot of times these companies, they're like, okay, this is going to be the schedule. Of what we're going to do for the sales. Yeah. I don't know.
I think you're being a little bit kind with Bethesda. I'm not,
I'm just,
you know,
being, I'm
you're defensive of Fallout.
Yeah. I'm giving you an opposite view.
Right. Yeah. Which I'm not. Usually I'm the one who.
Oh my God. We should be upset that it dropped.
No. Listen, I'm not saying it's the end of the world. I'm saying feels bad that 5 days after you paid it full price on release day, it's $40. I think it's reasonable to be upset about this. I'm not saying you should burn down your house in protest. I'm saying it's reasonable to be upset. And I'm usually the person who says being angry, you know, people are too angry about stuff. I'm the one trying to find, you know, balance in the force.
Are you playing Red Dead 2?
I played it when it was released. Now I found better things to do with my time.
Yep.
I think, you know, I think Red Dead is a very interesting game that we'll be talking about for a long time to come. I just don't think it's a great game, but I think it's a great for lack of a better word, it's a very interesting piece of art. And it's trying to do things that are different and interesting in the same way that some indie games do, except this one, as I said when I first talked about it, has a, you know, quadruple A budget. So that alone is interesting. And there are many things to discuss. I'm sure we'll talk about them more and in the next few years. But I couldn't play it.
I went back to Tomb Raider.
Yeah, you and many other people. Yeah. So on Black Friday, I bought a couple of games, Tomb Raider and Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Before that, let's talk about an actual indie game, Return of the Obra Dinn, which is super weird and a lot of people love, and I thought was, you know, I would try just because it's interesting visually and I wanted to know what it's about. It's a game by Lucas Pope, who released Papers, Please, who developed and released Papers, Please. Super interesting thing. If you haven't seen the visuals of that game, go check it out. But it's essentially a weird puzzle that is also a walking simulator. And a lot of people have been talking about the puzzle aspect, but I didn't realize you could play it as a walking simulator. And the mechanics of it are so interesting. You essentially get on this, I'm not spoiling anything, it's literally the first 5 minutes of the game. You get on this boat, it's in a Victorian era, you get on this boat, and this is the entire game takes place on that boat with these DOS/macOS first version Apple II visuals with only two colors, but it's a 3D, it's a filter applied on the 3D game. So you get on that boat and you have to find out what happened to all of the people on the boat who died, and all of them died. And you have a special clock, I guess. Watch, a pocket watch, that's how you call it, that allows you, when you find someone who died, you see the corpse and you click the watch and you see in kind of a diorama of the scene when they died, the moment of their death. And you can explore the diorama, walk around, and it you piece together clues to what's happened to them and what's happened to the entire boat through that. And it's super interesting because the way the story is told is through those dioramas and the few lines of dialogue that you hear that lead up to the death. And you go sometimes back through time and then forward through time to explore the events that led to all of this unraveling. And so the gamey part of it is this puzzle of having to figure out who each person is and what happened to them, how they died. And the story aspect of it is very strong as well. So with all that said, I don't think the game is for me. So I'm not necessarily going to be playing it to the end. But I do admire the artness, the artfulness of it, and the game design aspect as well.
It sounds like a game I was just playing before I start Fallout 76. We Happy Few, have you played that yet?
No, I haven't. I mean, yeah, it's We Happy Few seems like it's interesting, but it's not a very good game. This one
I'm
is getting much
it.
More. Yeah, well, apparently you like the games that everyone else hates.
I guess so. I love it because it's the same thing where you're playing, it's a first person. And there's a lot of elements of Fallout 76 in it. Like you have to collect honey and you do the same in Fallout 76. And you have weapons and you're playing as three different people. So the first story, you're in a world that something really, really bad has happened, but everyone takes this pill called joy to forget it. And you go off your joy and you're trying to figure out and remember what happened, and you're slowly getting your memories back, and it's pretty awful. And that's the first guy, and you play as two more characters, and you're kind of finding out what happened to this small little island town, and you pick up these masks that give you glimpses to those memories. So it sounds very similar.
Yeah,
it's really cool. I the gameplay, like you said, sometimes the gameplay is whatever, but it's just weird and creepy and Bioshocky and yeah.
Well, I guess there are some similarities. The main difference, I guess, is that the gameplay from Obra Dinn is really a puzzle aspect. You can't really even call it gameplay. It's like the game mechanics. It's puzzly more than twitchy. And it works. It's pretty interesting. So if this is your kind of game, you probably already have it because it's been making a lot of noise. But it's worth checking into for general gaming culture's sake. Mm-hmm. I don't know if
I'll check it out. Looks sounds
very weird looking, by the way.
I love those weird games. I just love it.
If you haven't seen what it looks like Google it now. Return of the Obra Dinn, and you'll see what it looks like. It's very unexpected. It's not what you would think of for a game like this, or maybe it would be. And so we happy few, at least you, one person likes it, and that's you.
Shut up.
No, but I've heard nothing but very critical opinions.
You running very critical circles, I guess.
I guess so. Hey, what I'm not critical about is one of the games I bought for Black Friday. I've loved it so much, I haven't even tried the other one. So I bought, as I said, a Tomb Raider and Assassin's Creed, and I've been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey nonstop. I was very apprehensive of the game because of those critical circles I run into, apparently. And a lot of people saying, you know, pointing out the issues of the game, I think a little bit too forcefully, and probably to try and appear balanced, because there are certainly some issues, not the least of which being the question of that increased experience rate that you can get through a microtransaction. You can pay $10 to get 50% more XP throughout the game, which essentially allows you to mainline the story and not worry about any of the side quests, which are pretty fun and interesting. But if you don't do them, then obviously you can't mainline the story. You can't go through with the story. And I think if that microtransaction bit hadn't been there, no one would have worried. It would have just been, well, of course, you have to do some side stuff to keep going with the main story. But since it's there, of course, everyone wonders. And that's a legitimate question. We wonder if they haven't put so many side things to do and lowered the level of XP you're getting to force you to, you know, to encourage people to get that XP boost. So I don't think the... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, Mark is playing this game, Odyssey, and he did the boost. He actually was...
Really?
He was worried about it, but he only has like 2 hours a night to play.
Right.
And he was really enjoying it. And he's like, why am I beating myself up? I want to play this game. So he did it, and he's like, I just did it. It was like this big achievement. He's like, I got rid of the guilt. And I think this is
a legitimate concern. Oh, go ahead. Finish up.
I was just saying that he was glad it was there because it gave him enjoyment of the game. It really utilized the time that he did have, because he wanted to play the game, but he didn't have all that time.
And that's where the question comes from, right? Because if you want to design this game, let's say you don't even have that question of whether or not there will be an XP boost, do you design it by giving enough XP when you're doing the main story to keep going, therefore kind of nullifying the side things? Or do you keep the side things in, and then that means that people who don't have a lot of time, because it's a long game, like it's a very rich game, that means that people who don't have a lot of time are probably never going to see the main story because, you know, there's too much to do. And that question, I think, isn't a simple, oh, they did it for the money, or oh, they couldn't have done it otherwise, or, you know. But the fact that the microtransaction thing exists does leave a little bit of a... you know, the question.
Yeah.
But regardless
they're
of this.
Trying to get they're trying to work both sides. They're trying to work the side that, you know, the person that has all the time in the world there, you know, for 40 plus hours and play that game. And then the person that has only a handful kids, family, gamers are getting older. And of course, thus they have less time.
But they could have designed the game to from the, I don't know, they could have enabled an option for this, or I don't know.
Maybe.
Anyway, I don't want to spend, it is what it is. It's been discussed to death. I want to focus a little bit more on the fact that, actually the game is really awesome. And it's the question of, is there some unnecessary filling in that game, I guess does exist, but there are so many things to do in this game. So first of all, the gameplay, I don't know why it didn't grab me in Origins. Maybe it's different enough that it grabbed me here and not in Origins. But I got into it immediately in this one. The setting might have something to do with it. Ancient Greece might speak to me more than Egypt. But beyond that, you start the game. It's fun from the beginning. You have a ton of things to do. And then it adds system upon system upon system. Like, there are 15 different things you can do at any given time, and all of them, well, maybe not all of them are fun, but a good majority of them are really fun to do. As Mark found out, you have to be willing to do side things on different islands, but those things are fun too. So I don't really have a problem with it. It does take a lot of time, but you know, it's it does add systems that are, it's very reminiscent of Shadow of Mordor, and especially Shadow of War, which I think it got a lot of inspiration from. In the mercenary system, there's a mercenary rank system that you climb through. There's, I don't want to say too much because maybe some people are going to find out and it's going to be fun, but there's that is pretty well known. There's balance of powers on the different islands that you can weaken by attacking and burning their supplies and stuff, and then you create a battle opportunity where you can defend or attack whoever, because you're a mercenary, so you can sell your services to either of them. And it's just, I was very surprised that this game, that I'm enjoying this game so much, and quite honestly at how good this game is. Like, it was really interesting. We were talking about Red Dead Redemption 2, and I had Red Dead on my hard drive, and I installed Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And for the first couple of days, it was like, so am I going to play one or the other? And invariably, I went to Assassin's Creed because I'm having fun playing Assassin's Creed. So
that first chapter of Red Dead is just a slog. And it's, I feel like, it almost being like, oh, you say you're a fan of Red Dead? Well, try this. See if you can get through this.
I know.
Because I honestly got frustrated with it, and I went back to Shadow Tomb Raider and finished that off because it was fun and it was fast paced, and I'm going all over and solving puzzles. And I think it's similar to the Assassin's Creed Odyssey game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to giving it a try as well. I'm wondering if I'm going to enjoy it as much as Assassin's Creed, because I'm like, as I joked on Twitter, Assassin's Creed is the only thing I want to play right now. So I'm kind of waiting to give Tomb Raider a try at some point. So would you say it's also super fun? Like, because it's also gotten reviews where people are like, yeah, it's great, but it's also the same as Rise, and you know, it's
exactly.
The
but yeah, okay. The way I kind of approached it was, it's the third chapter in a story. So I'm like, okay, so this is the last one. It does feel like the other ones, but you know, we as gamers always ask for that. Like, oh, can you just give me what I like? So that's what they did. They gave you what you liked.
And when they do something different, like Fallout 76, everyone is pissed because it's not Fallout 4 or 5.
Even though people have been asking for multiplayer Fallout for years, they're like, okay, ooh, multiplayer. So, yeah. It took me a little while to warm up to Shadow of the Tomb Raider, but eventually I got into it, and I really enjoyed it. There are some weird claustrophobic moments in that game, though. I'd give you a little heads up.
Okay.
Good to know. Kind of in, but yeah, I liked it.
All right. Well, I'll give it a try at some point as well.
You should.
So I guess that's it for the games we've been playing. There are a few additional tidbits of news we're going to go through. Red Dead Redemption 2 Online is starting, I guess, tomorrow, depending on what edition and when you've started playing. And but the beta, is starting tomorrow. It's going to ramp up over the next few days. So if you have Red Dead 2, you will be eligible between tomorrow and like next week to start playing it. there was a leak of Super Smash Brothers Ultimate like 2 weeks before release, or a week and a half. The full game is available for people who, I guess, jailbreaked their Switches. And there's like footage everywhere. It's pretty incredible that this happened. Apparently it happened thanks to probably people who got it from review code. People have had, journalists have had. And there's even a store in Mexico that got its hands on it, and who basically dumped the ROM. Someone bought it from there and dumped the ROM, and so everyone can play it. If you have jailbroken your Switch, which I wouldn't recommend to do because it's dangerous for your Switch. and some people have been saying like some of the versions don't run or break the console or stuff like that. But anyway, there's tons of footage. If you're excited for this game, you can go check it out on YouTube, I'm guessing. And the game is like pre-ordering better than any Switch game or Smash game ever, which is not that surprising, I suppose. It's been a while, if we don't count the Wii U version, which no one counts because no one had a Wii U except me, I guess. The Game Awards were going to be, you know what, we don't care about the award nominees, although you can go vote for them if you want.
God of War was good.
The what?
I said God of War was a great game.
It was.
I know the wins.
Game of the Year, I was pretty happy with the nominees, but we'll see. That is on the 6th or 7th, so we'll have fun with that as well. Have you seen the Detective Pikachu trailer? It's just, you know, since we're talking about Pokemon. So again, everyone seems to hate it. What do you
really
think?
Whatever. I don't have a strong feeling about Pokemon. I thought it was funny. I thought it was weird that Ryan Reynolds was the voice of Pikachu. But it could work, maybe. I don't know.
So I'm gonna maybe blow the mind of a few people there. I thought it was great. I'm going to go see that movie, which if you had told me, you know, 3 weeks ago, are you going to go watch Detective Pikachu? I would have said, are you kidding me? like, no way. And this looks like it could be, like, you can't make a serious Pikachu live action movie. It has to be a certain level of, you know, self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
So unless, you know, you do it for kids and that's a completely different movie. So I don't know. I thought it was fun. I thought the take seemed to strike the right balance between serious and self-aware and fun. So I'm curious. I'm gonna go see it, I think.
Tell me how it is. I never get to the movies anymore.
Yeah, so. That's probably going to be a problem. You're right. Valve is finally discontinuing its Steam Link. You know, the little box you connect to your TV to stream your games from your PC. Available on set-top boxes, on Android set-top boxes and some TVs. Unfortunately, not on the Apple products for various reasons. So the Steam Link. It's interesting because it seems Valve is kind of finally getting away from hardware, and maybe it means they're going to start making games again. I know Artifact is just releasing now, but that almost doesn't count. I don't know. It's like, it's a card game, which is fine. I don't have anything against card games, but what else? You know, that doesn't really matter anymore. I'm going to just reference the great article by Jason Trier about Diablo and the feedback and sources he got from people inside Blizzard and what happened with that whole fiasco at BlizzCon with the announcement of Diablo Immortal. Go check it out if you haven't. It's a really interesting read if you're interested in that. It's super long. There are a couple of tidbits of information that I think are especially interesting to point out. I will say there's a lot of pointing the finger at Activision in the current state of Blizzard, which I'm not sure I agree with. Big surprise, I'm a Blizzard chill in the eyes of some people. But, you know, I did work at the company for 5 years, and it was a while ago, so maybe things have changed. But it at the time I was there, it was after the merger between Activision and Blizzard, and at the time, Activision was always the bad guy. You know, already back then, people were saying, oh, Activision has done this, and this is because of them that this is happening. And like, my personal experience, I never felt that in the company. Like, I never felt the influence of Activision being negative, and yet it was always being touted as the bad guy by the community. And on the contrary, like what I've been saying for a while, I was very wary of Activision's influence on Blizzard when I joined. And I was incredibly surprised that, you have to remember, in 2012, when Diablo 3 launched, which was a big issue, of course, the launch was not ideal. Some people, you know, it would have been fair to expect that, given the state of the company, StarCraft II wasn't doing great. Diablo III had launched and was having issues. Warcraft, World of Warcraft, was off its impossible rise. You know, it was around 2010 that subscription started going down instead of up. And as we now know, Titan was in big trouble in 2012, 2013. It would have been absolutely the time for Activision, if they had, you know, those kinds of intentions, for them to get into the company and mess things up. And honestly, they didn't, or I didn't feel it. But my suspicion is that they know that Blizzard knows how to do games, and they gave Morheim and the company time to make good games that would sell that well and make them a lot of money. So I don't see why now they would all of a sudden jump in and start cutting costs and firing people, and like, that makes no sense. So until I have, like, I'm going to wait a little bit more to give credence to those kinds of speculations. And I would encourage people, I don't encourage people to do anything. You do whatever you want, whatever. But I think it makes no sense that Activision would jump in now and mess things up, because they haven't before, when it made a lot more sense to do that.
Right.
I will also say that the question of cost cutting that Schreier talks about, given the from his sources, again, look at the situation Blizzard is in now. We now know that Diablo 4 is not going to come for a while. Battle for Azeroth was just released. Hearthstone, Heroes, and Overwatch are getting a little bit long in the tooth. So they don't have anything coming for the next, you know, 12 to 18 months, maybe more. It would be, you know, it's not that they made $1 billion with whatever game 2 years ago, so they should be happy with this and continue at a breakneck pace. That's not how it works. If you don't have, you know, if you want to keep people developing and doing the work they do comfortably, you have to be a little bit conservative. So I would be very interested in knowing where the cost cutting is happening. You know, what we've heard from the sources is that staffing is not on the chopping block. Like, if you need a developer, whatever, you can hire people. And that's the most important thing. So given that, I would be curious to know where the cost cutting is happening. Maybe it's in trade events that you don't go to because you don't have anything to show. Maybe it's on, I don't know, champagne celebrations of a game, patch release or whatever. You know, they have those game celebrations for champagne celebrations that we see pictures of on social media. I don't know. But the fact that they're not cutting on staff is a good sign to me. So it seems to me like conservative management rather than, oh my God, you know, you're spending too much money, we're going to cut your everything in half, and that's going to hamper your ability to make games. So I don't know.
The other thing I hear a lot is, oh, they're just trying to make, well, duh, they're a business. They're trying to pay people for the work that they're doing. I feel like in this I feel like it's getting better, but, you know, free to play and all that, like, somebody has to get paid.
I agree. I also think there are ways of doing it. I think it's possible to go too far, and certainly with the issue we've seen last year with Battlefront 2, it did go too far. The question of the you know, we're going to slow your game down, but we're also going to give you that XP boost if you pay $10 is also questionable. Right. Like, the question can exist, as we said before. Certainly the Diablo Immortal is going for a different market, which is very lucrative. So I understand the question being asked. But yeah, in general, obviously someone has to get paid. But I don't think in general, reasonable people aren't saying Blizzard shouldn't find a way to make monies, money. But so yeah, anyway, go read the full article. Super interesting, as I said. There's discussions about the different ways that Diablo 4 development has gone. Like, it's gone through one major reset, and currently is going in a very dark direction. But it's been reset 2 years ago, so it needs to more time in the oven. There's a big part of the development from the, if not all of the development from the Allen Adham incubator, which is focused on mobile. So it seems they're doing a lot of mobile stuff. And Corey Stockton, our good Nintendo fan friend, is apparently working on a Warcraft version of Pokemon Go. And apparently, I'm not a fan of Pokemon Go, but apparently there's a lot more gameplay in that version. Obviously, yeah. It's not going to be exactly the same, but they also say that the developers are the ones who are excited about mobile games. So it's not like a mandate from someone up top saying you're now going to make mobile games, which I think is making me hopeful for getting versions of mobile games that I might actually enjoy. As we discussed before, you know, there's no reason mobile games wouldn't be enjoyable by core gamers. And maybe they're going to find the magic formula that has eluded, I think, all of mobile developers until now, because we as core gamers haven't jumped into that arena so much. And maybe Blizzard can do it. We'll see. But the fact that the developers are the ones, according to those sometimes negative sources, they're saying the developers are the ones who are excited about those games, gives me a little bit more hope. So I don't know. We'll see. But again, the article is great. Go read it. It's a super long read, very informative. And it's a great reporting again by Jason Schreier. And it's, I'm providing you kind of the positive spin on it, and there's a lot of more concerning stuff in the article. So if you're curious why I'm being like, oh, this is like this and like that, go read it. It's very interesting. And that's gonna be it, I think, for this episode.
And we're done.
Yes. We covered
a lot.
Yeah, we did. We usually try to do that. So thanks so much, Nicole, for being on the show and sharing your love Fallout in the face of adversity.
I just can't help it.
So you mentioned what I do. You mentioned Ladies of Leet, yes. And maybe you also have a Twitter account you can promote if people want more.
I do,
Nicole.
So Kim, Stephanie, and I talk about video games over on ladiesofleet.com. Can you believe we've been doing that for almost 10 years? 10
what?
Years.
No.
Yes, it's
you
coming up.
Haven't.
On our
You're
year.
Lying.
Yeah. We took a break, but then
it
we
was
came
a pretty
back.
Long break, though. It was what?
It was
three
a
years?
Long. It was 2 years. Okay. So I guess you can deduct. Two
no, but
years
it's, that. It's you started 10 years ago. I can't believe this. It's like I remember listening to you and sending, like, I can't remember if it was recorded stuff or just emails. I can't believe it's been 10 years. I didn't even know my wife 10 years ago. That's insane.
Yeah. Well, Movielicious would be 10 years as well, because we started Movielicious around the same time. We actually started Movielicious before Ladies of Leet.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
But right. You can also follow me on Twitter at Nicole Spag. So that's all over as Nicole Spag.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. Damn it. I had an excellent joke about Fallout 76. I was going to say something like more like full out flat on your face 76 or something like that. I had prepared that joke for like 3 days. Damn it.
But bump. That was a terrible joke.
I'll use it as a title. It's fine. I think it will work.
That's all.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Nicole Spag. And the link will be in the show notes for your Twitter account. And you can find everything she does from there. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can also find this show and another one at FrenchSpin.com. If you're interested, go check it out. And if you have something to say about what we've been discussing, you can go comment on the blog at FrenchSpin.com. We thank you very much for listening. And we will be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. Talk to you then.
Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.